This is a service recording of the Unitarian Universalist Society of Oneonta, New York.
Our first reading is a new favorite of mine. I may have shared it once before recently. I know the Board of Trustees has heard it at one of their meetings. It is Long Haul People by Rudy Nemser. Occasionally when I do readings or speak in the sermon, someone will come up to me and say, "You were talking about me, weren't you?" In this case, the answer to that question is yes. You find them in churches when you are lucky. Other places too, though I mostly only know the ecclesiastical varieties. Long-haul people, upon whose shoulders and pocketbooks and casseroles and daylight nighttime hours a church is built and maintained. After the brass is tarnished and cushions need restitching. They pay their pledges full and on time, even when the music's modern. Support each canvas, though the sermons aren't always short. Mow lawns and come to suppers. Teach Sunday school when there's no one else and it means they'll miss service. Ask what they think of the minister, or plans for the kitchen renovation, or the choral anthem, or the Christmas pageant, or the color of the bathroom paint, they'll reply, "Individuals and fashions arrive and pass. The church, their church, will be here steady and hale for a long, long time. It will. For long-haul people bless a church with a very special blessing indeed." Our second reading is a small reflection by the Reverend Patrick O'Neill entitled, "What We Love, We Empower." What we love, we empower. We can't claim to love justice as long as we are willing to tolerate oppression or racism. We can't claim to love peace unless somehow, in some way, we are seeking to make peace a reality in the world and in our personal lives. We work for what we love. We invest in what we love. We try to become worthy of what we love and of the people we love. We give of our time, our energies, our attention, and our resources so that we, what we love, might thrive. This principle applies to our society as well. Becoming a member is also about empowerment, although we don't always think of it that way. By joining a congregation, we declare that what the congregation stands for, the principles it teaches, the work it engages, the community it strives to become, are all things that we hold close to our hearts. By being members, we commit to empowering this little institution. And we have a right to expect the congregation will empower us in return. It will call us to higher ground, to greater love, greater compassion, greater caring for the world and its troubles, for those suffering and their pains, for the deprived and their needs. It will empower us by calling us to live out our ideals and our principles in everyday life and in everyday relationships. It will empower our children, too, if we have them. It will teach them tolerance and respect for the good and the holy. It will teach them self-love and love for others. It will provide safety and encouragement and community in times of celebration and loss. This is our great covenant and compact as members of the congregation. This is what we are here to do and to be for one another. By what we do here, by what we contribute, each in our own way here, by the people we become here, by the ideals and visions that we embrace and follow, by the families we help to shape here in the society, we increase the store of love and justice in the world. So endeth the readings. There are some core principles to who we are as Unitarian Universalists, some core principles to our faith tradition. And I am not referring to the seven principles. Theodore Parker once wrote a wonderful sermon about Christianity. He called it the transient and the permanent of Christianity. And he talked about the things that existed right from the beginning as cores of that faith, and then all the things that people had added and changed over the years. And it got him into a lot of trouble with his colleagues at the time. The same is true about Unitarian Universalism. While the seven principles are great, and most of us know them, they weren't always there. And they've changed. We've edited them. We'll probably edit them again. So that's not, in my opinion, the core of who we are. That's something we've added or modified. I would argue that one of the cores of who we are as Unitarian Universalists is the belief that none of us has a monopoly on the truth. That each of us has access to the divine, to meaning, however you define it. And that's one of our cores too. You get to define it. Whatever authority I have that you have given me as your minister, it does not include me telling you what you have to believe. So that's one of our cores. And that independence part, we're really good at that one. That one we got. It's one of our strengths, and it gets us into trouble sometimes. But there was another core to who we are that started long ago. And I say we practice that one too all the time. We just don't pay as much attention to it. And that is that we do this together. Each of us has individual access to religious truth and meaning, but that's not enough. If it were, we would all be living like Henry David Thoreau, building a shack in our neighbor's back lot and living on our own, sort of. I say sort of because he took his laundry home to have his mother do it. Our Sunday mornings would be spent on individual pursuits, a walk in the woods, or perhaps reading the paper, or drinking the perfect cup of coffee, whatever your particular sense of the divine is. There would be no societies, no churches, no fellowships. The other principle of our congregational polity and our tradition is that we are all in this together. That we are not only our own authorities, but we are also mutually responsible to one another and help one another in their search for truth and meaning. That quest for truth and meaning is better done not alone, not on our own, but together. We each walk our own paths. We each seek our own answers and our own truths, but we are all walking those individual paths side by side by side by side. And there's something radical about that. You do not have to believe what I believe, and you don't have to believe what I believe, and you don't have to believe what they believe, but we're all going to walk together side by side anyway. We're going to figure out how to live and work and worship and get things done even though we think differently. And that's a pretty radical concept. Why? Why do we do this? Why do we do this together? Why do we worship together? Why do we study together? Why do we quest together? Why is this one of our principles? Because we each have our own piece of the truth. And our diversity gives us more of the greater whole. Individually, we risk believing that we are finished. You ever have that? I know exactly what I believe. It's never going to change. You know anybody like that? Being in a community with other free thinkers tends to prevent that from happening if you actually talk about it. We get satisfied with our own answers sometimes. Growth actually comes from being questioned and challenged in a nice way, of course. There are ways to challenge one another without telling each other we're crazy. Because there are so many other things that we can't do alone, so many things that we are better at together. That's the phrase, we are greater than the sum of our parts. Or another one, many hands make light work. When I was a kid, I didn't understand that phrase, and I thought it took multiple people to put in a light bulb. So look at this morning for a second. Just this morning, or every Sunday morning, Robin printed the order of service. The ushers today handed them out. We put out the hymnals, put out the signs, the handicap signs outside. Dave set up the chairs before we even got here, cleared the sanctuary, set out the coffee pots. Member of the sound team came early. Paul Carter, who is here today, set up the sound system, checked it out. Worship associate, Patricia, today checks everything, prepared the announcements, makes sure that people feel welcomed when they get here. And the hidden part of her job is to make sure I don't forget anything. Our coffee hosts set up the tables, bring food and refreshments, though Dave helped set up the coffee first. Michael and Dorothy prepare and practice the music. And today, Tim's off, except Tim was over in the other building practicing with the choir so that they're ready for the next time they're singing. It's not really a day off if he does that. Susan prepares children's worship and coordinates the religious education class, and each class has 2 to 4 volunteer teachers, and then there's 2 childcare providers in the nursery downstairs. Deb Bruce, our volunteer librarian, brings books every Sunday on the topic of the day, no matter how odd or obscure I make them. She's done a fabulous job today. You should check them out. We have freshly painted walls in our sanctuary, thanks to the contractors, overseen by the volunteers on the property committee. And I want to make a special announcement. You'll notice that the sign is not taped to the walls. And today we have a stewardship event. Pam coordinating the meal we are going to share. Alice and Carl baking bread, and multiple people have baked soup. Small group ministry folks have made salad fixings and helped set up. Numerous people have made desserts. Others brought drinks and beverages. Paul Robinson made these buttons for those that make their pledges. He's the one that makes our buttons for everybody every week that I ask him to. Judy, our great chair of the committee, gave the announcement and wrote the words to that song and was brave enough to sing it in front of you up here, sang it wonderfully, and has kept the committee on track. Mary made that display and those cute little meeples. That's what they call those little people. Those are meeples. She also usually takes care of the windows back here that change on a seasonal basis. Folks from the finance committee take the offering every Sunday and count the money and make the deposits. Today they're here to help us with stewardship and get pledge information. And me, I prepared the service and the weekly message. And I know there are people I did not mention. Thank you. Chancel table by Mary. There are people I didn't mention, A, because I forgot. And B, and this has become painfully obvious to me over the last year, there are people I didn't mention because I didn't know they were doing what they did. There are people here who just do things every week without being asked and without anybody knowing that they're doing it because it needs to be done, and that's what happens here. And of course, there is you. You who are here. You got out of bed. You got your kids ready, perhaps. You braved the elements. It was really cold this morning. I'm really getting sick of the cold. And you show up, because without you here, it would be pointless. Pointless. And that's just Sunday morning. Worship and religious education and stewardship Sunday. Think of all the other things we do around here. The social justice work, the small group ministries, the exercise classes, the yoga classes, the men's and women's breakfast on Thursday mornings, the Molly Task Force, the dessert theater, the rummage sale, the cookies and crafts, and all of the other fundraisers and special events. The Thanksgiving dinner, holiday workshop, volunteering at Saturday's Bread, and the Lord's Table, and Habitat for Humanity, and Caring Connections. And the list could go on and on and on and on, and none of it is done by one person alone. All of them require our shared efforts, working side by side, each giving our time and our attention and our talents and our treasures. Our religious ancestors knew that was the case, not just in their congregations, but in the congregational system as a whole. That's why the churches were organized around the individuals, and then the churches themselves looked for other churches to group together with, because they knew that they were better together. They needed to be called into accountability and challenged and assisted, and sometimes just to be with one another. We can't do this holy work alone. We can't empower this organization and empower each other alone. Every one of us is needed. Every one of us contributes. Some more than others, but all give what they can. Side by side, we make things happen. Side by side, we worship and learn and care for one another. Side by side, we do what we can to make this world a better place, healthy and whole. As an aside, this week I had dinner with a member of this congregation that I had never met. It was a member of this congregation who has kept their membership every year, paid their pledge every year, and has never been to church since I got here. Has never been to any one of our events. And they emailed me, and I said, well, let's do dinner. So we got together and had dinner, and I asked him in my blunt way, why are you a pledging member of this congregation that you are never at? Why is this place important to you? And they said to me, we joined the church for our children, and my son was troubled and had no peers and had no community. And I wasn't sure he was going to make it through his teenage years. And when we came to the UU church, he finally found a peer group. He finally found a community that cared, and he blossomed. He survived. He thrived. And now he is a successful adult in a UU church of his own. And though health and life and distance prevent me from coming to this congregation, it will always be my spiritual home. It will always be important to me. I will always be a member, and I will always pledge because it saved my son. That's good enough for me. That's not just good enough. That's fabulous. That was before my time, so kudos to those of you who were here then and did that. Kudos to those of you who are doing it today with the kids we have here now. You have no idea the effects that you might be having on the people in the pews next to you or in the chairs next to you or the people downstairs. We know how to volunteer in this congregation. Anytime someone asks for help, people are quick to step forward. We are a generous people. Every time we ask for donations for worthy causes or people in need, the money comes rolling in. I am always shocked by how much money we give when I ask for hurricane relief or earthquake relief or the Caring Connections last year. Stewardship, however, is a little bit different. Stewardship is a more subtle request for assistance. It's a call for financial support of us and our mission and our vision and our shared goals and our work. And quite frankly, it's always a little bit harder to get our goals, which is not to say we don't meet them. We do. I'm not sure why there's a difference. With our commitment to one another and with our deep generosity, you'd expect stewardship to be a breeze. And in many ways, it is. We do meet our goals, but not without a lot of nail-biting on the stewardship committee every year in that last week or two. And sometimes it stretches out for a month or two until finance has to actually make the final call. And then we made it. Maybe it's harder because some of us are unaccustomed to pledging and stewardship. Some of us are new. This might be the first church you've ever been a part of. So we wonder how much we should give or why it is important. We get that question a lot in the new UU classes. It's important because in our tradition, all of the funding of our operations for our actions and our programs comes from us. There is no higher authority with deep pockets. The UUA is not above us and giving us money. The UUA is us and we give them money. So how much should we give? That's a harder question to answer. We're very comfortable talking about sex in this church, but not necessarily about money. If we were a Catholic or a Muslim, this would be quite easy because both of those traditions have a belief in tithing. Any former Catholics, how much is a tithe? 10%. Easy. It's been drilled into them. We have no such requirement. There is no such sacrament in the UU Church. In some of the more conservative Orthodox faiths, those that don't pledge enough are not so gently reminded by their clergy of the risk of hell. This is another reason to be good to be a universalist. There is no such risk of that here. I do not know how much you pledge. I don't want to know. Traditionally, Unitarian Universalists have talked about the liberal tithe. The liberal tithe is 5% to your congregation, 5% to other worthy causes. I haven't hit that ideal yet. I've been trying every year since I started going to a UU church. My first pledge, the first year I was a member of a UU church, was $50. I was a cab driver and a student, and I was making $16,000 a year. $50 was the best I thought I could do. I volunteered a lot to try and make up for that. As I started seminary and then started going into churches, I started pledging more when I could. I've been shooting for 5%, and I haven't gotten there yet. I know how hard it is. Some people just can't give that much. Even though they would like to, and even though they love and believe in this church, life sometimes does not cooperate. Last year, between my pledge to this congregation and my pledge to the Church of the Larger Fellowship, of which I am a member, I managed to give just shy of 4.5%, which was a new record for me. This year, due to medical bills and the new house payments, things are a bit tighter than I would like, and I was really afraid I was going to have to actually reduce my pledge at a time when we're asking people to raise theirs. I can't raise mine, but I have figured out how to maintain it, and that's a small victory, and I'm going to celebrate that. I'm hopeful, as always, that there are people out there who can raise their pledges and cover those of us who cannot, or those of us who actually have to reduce theirs. I am not solely responsible for the financial well-being of our congregation. None of us are solely responsible for the financial well-being of the congregation, because we're in this together. And that means when some of us can't raise our pledge, when some of us have to lower our pledges, when some of us can't make any pledge at all, some people will pledge zero. And that counts, because they made a pledge of record. It just means that this year they can't contribute financially. When that happens, other people pick up the slack. It has always been the case in Unitarian and Universalist churches. Just as we care for one another and share our burdens, so too do we share our responsibility to care for this place, to steward our shared dreams and goals. This is the principle our religious ancestors enshrined. This is the principle we practice today and every year throughout the year. And because of our generosity and our dedication, our children and our children's children will have this community, this society, this faith, this sanctuary, to hold them and to challenge them and to inspire them, to care for them, and to carry them forward into an even better world. Because we are not a faith that demands a certain belief or a certain creed. We are instead a covenanted community. We focus not on what we believe, but how we will live, work, worship, and walk together side by side. Side by side, we have accomplished amazing transformative things. Side by side, we can and we will accomplish even more. And as we continue to work for a better world, I cannot think of anyone I would rather be walking with, anyone I would rather have by my side than the people of this congregation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this service recording of the Unitarian Universalist Society of Oneonta, New York. We are a welcoming congregation, accepting and affirming the lives of gay, lesbian, and bisexual people here among us. All members of the human family are welcome here. Our worship services take place every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. in our sanctuary, located at 12 Ford Avenue in Oneonta, New York. For more information about Unitarian Universalism and our congregation, please visit us in person or explore our website at www.uuso.org. This service is shared under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 4.0 International License.